Howdy do, buckaroos. This is the After Show with Mike and Kelly. I am Kelly.
And I am Mike.
And
you were going to do that.
you know, I like to keep you on your toes.
It was very, very good. Very good.
We are recording on Sunday, January 18th, 2015. I'm sorry, Mike, if I have a hard time hearing you over the stadium in Seattle where the Seahawks conquered Green Bay in a heartbreaker for Green Bay, a heart attack inducer for fans of Seattle because it had to go into overtime. It was a terribly exciting game. It was a terribly amazing game. And Seattle has a rep they scientifically measured with, like, audio equipment for being the loudest stadium in the NFL. So it's not surprising I can probably still hear the cheering from Portland.
I will just go on the record as saying I do not know what either a Packer or a Seahawk is. I'm not familiar with these creatures.
A Seahawk is an actual bird.
Okay, that makes sense.
So, yes, a Seahawk is an actual thing. I know that one is true. I've actually seen them. There used to be, I don't know if there still is one here in the zoo, but there used to be one here at the Portland Zoo. They have one in Seattle. Anyway, so, oh my God, Seahawks. And I was just looking up the score for the other game, and it looks like it's going to be the Patriots and the Seahawks in the Super Bowl, which is going to be very exciting, at least for me. And I always like a nice East Coast, West Coast kind of thing, because it's just, you know, sort of easier to pick sides. So hopefully Mike and I will still be speaking to each other in February.
I will make it clear that I do not give a, as we say in Brooklyn, a rat's ass about the Patriots. And my Bostonian friends, Dave Kalo and the other Massachusettsians, hey, great. You know, awesome. Great. That's awesome that you guys have a team, you know. Patriots, whatever. Yeah, see, anyway.
And I just sort of figured that Kalo and Peter Cohen were bigger hockey fans anyway, so they were like, oh, wait, football, never mind.
Dave is a big, big Patriots fan. He is.
Oh, Dave.
So, I'm not.
The real question is whether Dave and I will be speaking to each other in February, is how it sounds. But I know the one thing we can all agree on is at least it's not the Cowboys.
That's
and
true.
This America's has been sports team with Mike and Kelly.
That's right. Thank you for joining us for the SB Nation podcast. So there's stuff going on. It's, you know, as we move into our weekly cadence, we're gonna have the ability to revisit some issues, dive a little deeper.
Yeah.
There's stuff that came up. I think it was last week that Flickr announced their 2014 top cameras and the iPhone coming in second, which is, I mean, what kind of planet are we on? You know, where there's a phone that's the second most popular camera in the world, or at least the second most popular camera among photo enthusiasts who choose to upload their photos to a particular website.
Right.
You know, qualifier.
Mm-hmm.
However, it is interesting to see these. See the impact of these devices on the wider world. How they've, you know, essentially killed the standalone music player. How they're slowly killing standalone GPS.
Well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
Speaking of those two examples, I will give you the prime example at my house of how this works. So the awesome thing, the first like wave of your computer creeping into your car.
Yes.
Was when you could buy a CD player for your car that would play a disc that you had burned MP3s to. First, it was hard to get a regular audio, like if you made a copy of a CD, you know, it was hard sometimes to get that burned disc to even play when that was initially a thing. You know, sometimes, you know, compatibility with different media and stuff was really weird. And then eventually you were able to play not just audio CDs, but MP3 CDs. So you have this CD full of MP3s, so you can burn, you know, 600 megabytes of MP3s, which is just orders
of
magnitude
more
music.
Which is a lot of music. It's a lot of music. It's a long road trip.
It totally is. And I used to make great use of that. I loved having an MP3. You know, I could have like 5 CDs and have like all the music I could stand with those 5 CDs in my car, which was awesome. And here's the thing. It's like, that was the first inkling of, like, you don't have to listen to the radio because you can put all this music in your car and it's a piece of cake.
Yep.
So here's what's funny about that is Mr. Kelly, for Christmas, got a phone holder, a thing to hold his iPhone 6, and you don't hook it to the vent. You mount it in the CD slot of your car.
And okay, that's hilarious. So that's actually hilarious.
It's brilliant, really, because with everybody using Bluetooth in their car to make their phone their standalone music player, like, I can't tell you the last time I put a CD in or took a CD out that I was listening to in my car, because first my iPod and then my phone were the source of all the music that I listened to in the car.
I also cannot. I was just thinking about this the other day. It's like, I know there's a CD slot in my car. I cannot remember the last time I used it. And in fact, worse than that, the CD slot in my iMac. I had occasion. I had occasion on Friday to need to burn an audio CD for my daughter's dance audition. I needed to burn a CD with one song on it, 1 2-minute song from Frozen, and I discovered that there is a disc stuck in my drive that I was unaware of, not even aware that it was there. That's how infrequently I use it. At some point in the, I think what I did is I put in a CD, either a CD to rip it or a DVD to handbrake it, months ago, and forgot that it happened. And then it's still there, and I can't get it out. And I've tried all the, before everybody sends in, we welcome your cards and letters. Yes, I've tried the restart holding on the mouse button. I've tried the option boot and eject at the EFI boot screen. I've tried all that. I've tried disk utility. I've tried terminal. It's a hardware problem.
It's time for a hardware solution. You're going to need to unfold a paperclip and then peel open. I know.
Slot loading iMac.
There's a thing.
It's almost impossible to find.
I know, but I've done it. That's why I know it's possible. That's why I know that it's a thing, because it has been done.
We will take that offline. If you guys have the video, this is a 2011 iMac, I think, 2011 vintage slot-loading aluminum iMac. So I've got to find the little spot. But even if I do, it may not work, because it's clearly, right. I mean, clearly it is stuck. So,
As I was talking about that, I couldn't even tell you what the CD is that's in my car. I'm sure there's one in there. I just don't know what it is.
I don't know which one it is. Yeah. And I too do not know what is the CD that is stuck.
I'm sure I burned it. I just don't know what's there.
I had to dig out. It's an iOmega USB DVD-R external drive, which comes with the Y cable, the USB Y cable, because it needs more power. And of course, somewhere, in the basement, I've got an Apple branded super drive that I could have pulled out, but this was the one that was closest to hand. All that to say, I'm really annoyed that I had to go through this. However, it does point out, as you say, the same fact of the unimagined decline of optical media, that there's a phone mount that just sticks into your CD slot is amazing to me.
And here's the thing that to me is hilarious about it. So used to be that Mr. Kelly would fire up Pandora because his phone connects to the Bluetooth in the car, which it doesn't work very well anymore. You have to sort of select it by hand every time. He drives an Outback, and you have to select it by hand every time. And I keep hearing from different people that, I installed this system update. So, like, it broke with iOS 7. Mm-hmm. And you had to pair it by hand. And then we started looking for answers and couldn't find anything. And it's not like there's an update available from Subaru. And this is when I started getting grumpy about things being dumb. And, like, what do you do when, you know, something happens? And this is why I was excited about CarPlay, because it makes your phone the brain. So you don't have to worry about your car being the problem anymore. And anyway, so you have to select it by hand in order to get it to pair. But he sets it up. And he basically will stream Pandora, because we have unlimited data. That unlimited data plan that AT&T is really trying hard to get rid of, I'm never getting rid of it. And you can pry that $35 a month unlimited data from my cold, dead fingers. No joke. I am clinging to that like the last chopper out of Saigon. too soon?
Hard to tell. We'll know. You can send those tweets go to at Verso.
Yes, V-E-R-S-O. He used to just stream Pandora on it. And so now, most of the time, what he does is he puts it in the... Once his phone is connected, he puts it in the CD-mounted mobile phone holder.
Yeah.
And uses Waze, which can also be used as a GPS.
Uh-huh.
So when you talked about, you know, the decline of the GPS, the decline of the music player, like, there's all of it right there. He uses the CD mount to show the GPS on his phone.
Yeah. He is ground zero for that's happening. I'm actually, as we're talking, I'm holding in my hand a 30 gig video iPod, which, you know, it's not quite a paperweight. I mean, we have devices around the house that are happy to have 30 gig iPods plugged into them.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's so funny that I don't, you know, I can't think of the last time it occurred to me to sync that up and load new music on it, which I should probably do. You know,
yes.
Someone might get some enjoyment out of it.
I get enjoyment out of mine. I have the 80 gig iPod video and I adore it. And to this day, I use it fairly regularly. I use it for longer car trips, basically, because it's not as high powered to charge, and I don't have to worry about like gnawing on the battery with reception issues and stuff. Because there's sometimes when I'm driving through like dead zones or low reception zones,
that the phone will chew through the battery if you leave.
Yeah, and so if I only want to plug in the one cable, then I can just do that and call it good. So, I actually still love my little white slab of metal. It makes me really happy. So, anyway, it's funny to me, though, to see that kind of stuff. Like, it seems to me, the thing that's interesting, the one that's interesting to me to notice lately is high definition, like a camera that shoots 1080p,
mm-hmm.
Like a dedicated video camera. You know, there was a point not that long ago when it was like, wow, that guy has a high def video camera. And you were saying it impressed, and now it's like, wow, that guy's a high-def video camera. I have one in my pocket.
Yeah.
You know, that also rings when someone wants to talk to me. And it's hilarious to me how fast that came and went. So I was thinking about that just the other day, and it struck me as funny.
Yeah, the pace of progress is quite rapid. Astonishingly so at times. We were gonna touch back on the functional high ground conversation from last week, the Marco Arment precipitated poo storm regarding Apple's QA and quality. And you know what reminded me of that today was trying to get my Jawbone Jambox and my iPhone 6 Plus to just play music, just do that, or just play a podcast. Could you play? Is it too much to ask for you to simply? Would it kill you to just play a podcast for me for 5 minutes without pausing, like every moment pausing and stopping and stuttering and skipping? I don't know why William Shatner wants podcasts to play, but he really does.
Because even Shatner is over the dramatic pause in the middle when you're trying to use your Jambox. That's why.
I just want my Gypsies, Champs, and Thieves to play from Spotify. Just one time through. Why is that unreasonable? That's not what I actually wanted to listen to in the shower. That's just what I was playing to test the connection. But I have a 6 Plus. I have a Jambox. Jambox, I was listening to one of my new favorite podcasts, the Backer Jack podcast, hosted by our friends, our actual real life friends,
yes.
Ross Rubin and Steve Sandy.
Indeed.
And Backer Jack, if you don't know it, is Ross's site covering all things crowdfunding. And he, when he was looking for a co-host for his podcast, I strongly suggested the mellifluous tones of Mr. Steve Sandy.
Yeah.
Who is a great, great podcaster, great co-host, and he also happens to be a big advocate for and interested party in crowdfunding.
Yep.
He's done the majority of our crowdfunding coverage at TUAW. So it seemed like a great fit. And I just now, just this week, got a chance to catch up on their first three episodes. And I'm so glad. I feel like I've midwifed it a little bit. maybe I'm misremembering and over when they write the history of it, of the Backer Jack podcast. I will feel that I was the matchmaker, but maybe I'm overstating my role. But I seem to recall suggesting that at first.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, I just was trying to get that podcast to play mm-hmm. while I was in the shower, and so I thought, okay, I've got a Jambox, I've got a phone,
yep.
they're already paired together on Bluetooth, and it plays for 5 seconds and stops, and then plays for 5 seconds, and so I unpaired it. I forgot it. I put it in pairing mode. I repaired it.
Yeah.
I started playing it again. And it played for about 2 minutes. And just, in fact, as I had gotten into the shower, cuts out.
This is the worst.
And then I had to, you know, go to the AirPlay toggle in mm-hmm. Overcast and switch it back. And I used a 1/8-inch stereo cable like a caveman. Like, I used an actual wire.
Didn't it just rub salt in the wound?
It's like, you might as well have just hit me with it. Just like, whip me with the cable. That's how good it would have felt.
Anyway,
all that to say, the whole functional high ground, things that just, like, they don't just work when they should work. You know, then later, I used another Jawbone product. I have an Era headset, and I used that for a solid, you know, hour and a half to listen to podcasts. I was walking around. That was great. And it worked fine. It's the I can't trust it because I can't be sure it's going to work all the time thing.
Right.
That's infuriating.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're trying to overcome.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's all part of the whole functional high ground story, which if you were listening last week, you heard about.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other interesting things that we didn't touch on last week, but that was a pretty big story, was 9to5 Mac rumor / leak that Mark Gurman posted of the possible 12-inch MacBook Air model with a revolutionary, shall we say, new interface, new I.O. plan. And Kelly, I'm assuming you saw this when it came out a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So we're talking, of course, about the presumed 12-inch MacBook Air, which will only have two ports. One, a audio headset jack, 1/8-inch jack, because, of course, you can't do without that.
Right.
As we've just learned.
I mean,
you have to have that.
Clearly.
Yes. And a USB port. No power, no display port, no lightning. One USB port, a very special USB port, a USB-C port.
Right.
This is part of the forthcoming 3.1 or 3.1 standard.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know what is special about the USB-C port, aside from that it's got a C in the name. It is that it's got the ability to deliver to the host up to 100 watts of power.
Right.
And it's got 10 gigabits of bandwidth, can support displays up to 4K, can support effectively DisplayPort. And so you basically would have this machine where when all you're using is power, you just have the power plugged in, or you could plug in USB, or you could plug in a monitor, but you could also plug in a little mini breakout box where the power cord would actually have these other ports hanging off of it.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think? Is this the kind of machine that you would want to see, you would want to use?
I think I would be interested to see sort of what that reaction ends up being, if for no other reason than, you know, a lot of people have a lot of stuff configured around the USB and the power solutions we already have, because they've been around a long time. They're kind of a known quantity. And so, you know, I assume there's going to be backwards compatibility with this. Like if I have a USB 2 thumb drive, like,
absolutely,
it's not going to give my Mac a seizure.
Well that's so, the expectation is that you would have essentially the equivalent of a USB hub that would be plugged into your machine, because you've got this C port, this single port.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a USB hub that plugs into an Apple provided hub that plugs into it. And within this hub, much like with the older cinema displays, you have this, you know, a breakout box that connects to a bunch of ports on your Mac, and then you have USB and so forth on the, and power going to the monitor. So you'd have this little breakout box. It would include USB 3, you know, traditional USB 3 ports, and a display port, and, you know, maybe Ethernet, who knows. I don't think there's a backwards compatibility story to really worry about in terms of existing peripherals. I think there's a backwards compatibility story to worry about in terms of people's sanity and willingness to sort of like, right. Whoa, my gosh, one port.
And, yeah, and, you know, and it's there's probably a certain amount of mental comfort, you know, to go along with that. Like, this is all new and different and therefore, you know, weird and maybe bad. And I think there's something to be, I think there's something to be said for that. You know, a lot of people are set in those ways and have been, you know, for a not insignificant amount of time. So I'm sort of curious to see where this would ultimately end up. I think it might be cool, but honestly, I think the coolest USB news in the last couple of weeks is the, who was it? Belkin or Griffin, who has the braided cover, reversible on the USB end lightning cable.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter which way you plug it in to either
double reverse
the power or the lightning port. Like, either one, like, however you plug it in, it's totally going to work. To me, that is the big USB news in the last week, which is, you know, dumb that there's big USB news and that I'm sort of rating it.
Well, I mean,
me is awesome.
It's a big deal. I mean, that is something that people, that will make people happy.
Yeah.
Because it's like it's a real convenience. It provides real functionality. I just am noticing now that these, the 12-inch MacBook Air rumors that include the USB-C port, and this shows you how much attention I pay to rumors. They go back to September, and possibly earlier. There's an analyst report from I think Jack March that got picked up that has most of the same details, including that the MagSafe port would be gone, that it would just be the USB-C port, and new unspecified charging method. So that's been around for a bit. I've never heard of Jack G. March. I guess I'm hearing about him for the first time now. So the Broadwell M processor, et cetera, et cetera.
See, here's the thing, though, is that MagSafe is glorious.
Yeah,
ask anyone who has a child or a pet or a careless cohabitator or a clumsy cohabitator, and every one of them will tell you that the value of a power cord that just pops out when it gets stepped on, chewed on, pulled on, whatever, instead of yanking $2,000 worth of aluminum to the floor in a crash of devastation. Cord just pops out, and then later you go pop it back in. Like, the joy of that to everyone the first time that that cord gets disrupted in some way that would take a lesser laptop down, everybody will hold forth to you at length about the joy that is the MagSafe connector. So it's weird to me that they would get rid of it.
Well, it is a little weird. It is one of the big design features on the laptop. It is one of the things that makes a difference. So, yeah, but you never know. I mean, if the breakaway or if the MagSafe piece of it could be in the dongle, sort of the snap away part.
Yeah,
you could still have that. And I think. The thing about MagSafe is that Apple did go to the trouble of creating a MagSafe 1 to MagSafe 2 dongle adapter.
Yeah.
So there's, and part of the reason for that is power supplies are expensive.
Yes.
And the last time there was a power supply transition, it was a giant pain in the ass.
Oh my God.
So can people tend to have more than one?
Yes.
So if it's at all possible to have the MagSafe hardware continue to work,
mm-hmm.
even if it requires a you know, bolt on. Conveniently, there are magnets in the MagSafe, so it's easy to put something in front of it that is going to
exactly.
stick. Exactly. So it's I almost like they planned it.
I know. I hope that's a thing. To zoom out a little bit to the larger piece of this rumor, which is actually physically larger, it's the 11-inch Air becoming a 12-inch MacBook Air. I have no doubt that there is a 12-inch MacBook Air in existence.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure it's a thing. Just like I'm sure it's a thing that there's one kicking around somewhere that has 3G built into it so that it's got automatic cell coverage, you know, without having to use an additional device. I also think there's probably a 10-inch one. I think there's probably a 14-inch one. There are a lot of things that I'm sure exist as a one or few off prototype that somebody went, let's try this and see how it is. So I'm sure there is one. Whether or not it was a good enough idea for Apple to turn it into something that they sell to the public at large is another matter. So I think for me what it would come down to is the aspect ratio. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because I think a lot of people are like, you know, I wanted something smaller than a 13, but the 11 is too small. I've heard that from a number of people. So, but then, you know, if you go to 12, you know, I would assume that would kill the 11, not the 13. So if you're going to kill the 11-inch, like all the people, you know, then at that point, like what makes the 12-inch different from the 13-inch? How do you differentiate those besides an inch? You know, so to me...
hey, like, you know, an inch could be a big deal. You never know.
Right.
Under the right circumstances.
To somebody, it's a deal breaker.
Yes.
I'm certain of that. But to a lot of people, you know, people, like capital P people, when you talk about like the world at large, you know, they're going to go, why would I get 12 if there's a 13 available? You know, or particularly if you leave the rest of the specs sort of the same, where the 13 is a much higher powered computer and it has an extra USB port and the keyboard is backlit and all these other things that the 13-inch Air has the 11-inch Air doesn't have, then it's going to be a really tough sell. And that just seems like two similar product line, you know, two similar models in the same product line. Mm-hmm. It would be really hard to distinguish the two. So to me, it's kind of a weird situation, and so I don't think there's a whole lot to it unless there's more shakeup coming to the MacBook Air line down the road.
Well, I mean, I think that the existing 13, and I think that this is, I think, something I mentioned last week, the existing 13 has a heck of a lot of overlap with the 13-inch MacBook Pro Retina.
Certainly.
And not a lot of differentiation. And this is a point that Victor Agreda made, that John Gruber made, and a bunch of people said, like, how do you make the Air special? How do you make the Air something that is its own thing? And this is one of the ways of doing it. I just sent to you, and we will post in the chat, Jack, that same Jack G. March who had the original suggestion of a 12-inch MacBook Air with the USB-C connector, has an interesting slide from Intel, and I don't know whether this is a real slide, a real leak or not, but the next generation of Thunderbolt, I guess this would be Thunderbolt 3, which is the Alpine Ridge Thunderbolt controller, or part of the Alpine Ridge system, it's a pretty strong spec match for the USB-C connector. It's very close, and the system charging in particular. So maybe what that is, what that USB-C type port is actually a flavor of Thunderbolt. It's a Thunderbolt 3 port, which to me makes a little bit more sense, because then it's Apple keeping... It's still Thunderbolt. It's the same branding. Mm-hmm. And in fact, could even be... Under the right circumstances, if it's you're just going to a display, it could be the same connector.
Now he says that because somebody said, but Thunderbolt 3 is twice as fast, and he replied, "I'm saying the connector will be used for Thunderbolt 3, like Mini DisplayPort is used for the current Thunderbolt."
Exactly. That's an interesting notion.
Yeah, when you turn it and look at it from that angle, that could be interesting.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. I think that is plausible. We'll rate that one as plausible, as the Mythbusters say. By the way, my daughter is still bereft about the fact that Cary Grant and Tori are no longer on Mythbusters. She's very broken up about it.
As well she should be. I too am still mourning that loss.
She's still feeling it. All right. Couple other things we wanted to talk about. You had a little interaction with the media powers that be this week around HomeKit. And how much of that would you like to share with our listeners?
Well, I will tell listeners sort of the rest of the story a little bit about this. I went looking for I was writing a piece, so you guys know I have a soft spot for home automation. In that I really want for it to be a good experience. I want it to be an Apple-level experience, to be able to do easy stuff. Like, I don't expect a bunch of high-tech, super advanced things to happen, but I was recently having a conversation with Jeff Gamet about Hue lights, and he said, you know, it seems like something I would be kind of interested in. I'm like, no, you're totally interested in it. Let me tell you why. You never have to come home to a dark house again. Because you can set up a little if-this-then-that rule or a little rule within the app itself for the Hue bulbs, and you can set it up for geofencing. So it knows when your phone is home, when your phone comes home, to turn the lights on. And then that way, no matter what time you left, no matter how long you were gone, you never have to come home to a dark house. It's that simple. And isn't that awesome? And I love that. So, you know, I'm like, this one little small thing will make your life so much better. And, like, it doesn't sound like a revolutionary thing, because it's not revolutionary, but once you've done it for a while, it just, like, every once in a while, it will strike you as, like, this is amazing, and it's really one of those moments when you think you live in the future. I love this. So, you know, the fact that you can do other stuff with the Hue bulbs is another story altogether, and you know, we can talk more about that. I watched the 12 Monkeys series premiere last night with the Philips Hue app, the sci-fi app that syncs your Hue bulbs to the show.
What?
Wait, you didn't hear about this?
No! Okay,
so let me start at the beginning. So you know 12 Monkeys, right?
Yes.
Okay, so sci-fi is turning that into a series. I don't know how, like, if they're going to do ad infinitum, or if it's like, we want to tell a 12 Monkeys stories we want to tell the 12 Monkeys story in this many episodes. You know, we're going to do one season or what. Like, I don't know how they're managing that. But sci-fi is making a 12 Monkeys TV show. In fact, they've made a significant portion of it, and they showed the premiere last night. So there's this app called Sci-Fi Sync, or I guess technically it's Sci-Fi Sync because they don't spell it sci-fi anymore. So this Sync app, you launch it, and it listens. It wants access to the microphone on your phone, and it listens. And then if you sync the Sci-Fi Sync app to your Hue bulbs, your Hue light bulbs. And if you're Kelly, you have like 5 Hue light bulbs in the same room as the TV. Then when you sync it, and I took a video of this. I'll shoot you a video to see what it's like. And so what happens is at certain points in the show, the lights change. So like there's a part where it turns into a, like they walk into an area that's very dimly lit. And the lights in your room go down so that it's darker in your room, too. And yeah. Then there's a part where they go into a room where the lighting is mostly red. And so your lights change gradually to a more red tone. And there's a part where, yeah, I'm not giving anything away here, 12 Monkeys involves some time travel.
Yeah.
And bouncing between a couple of particular times. So there's, like, some bright light and some sort of like lightning flashing, you know, electricity disbursement. That goes along with time travel, apparently, because I watched Back to the Future, and it's sort of like that there, too. And so the Hue bulbs all start going, you know, bright light, flashy, flashy, as it's going bright light, flashy, flashy on the TV.
That would freak me the hell out.
Now, see, you have to do it on purpose. Like, they don't sneak this on you. Like, you have to, if you have the Philips Hue
You have to do it on purpose.
Yeah.
The people at your house who are watching 12 Monkeys with you don't have to do it on purpose.
That's true. They may not
sign a release. They may not know. That is the oh my god!
That never even occurred to me.
That is the ultimate home entertainment troll. They're sitting in a perfectly normal living room with perfectly normal lighting, and you say, hey, you know what would be cool? Let's watch 12 Monkeys. Now, I don't know if that only works if you're watching it live, or what happens if
it
you're watching
it. It does not. I did it later on the TiVo.
Oh.
I recorded it with TiVo, and it worked with TiVo because it's syncing to the app is syncing to the audio. Just like when you use a second screen app, like Disney has second screen apps and stuff for like the pop-up video trivia track and stuff. So so you have to set it up. You have to give it access to the microphone. It doesn't work in the background. If you hit home, the sync quits working. If you power, if you put your phone to sleep, it quits working. So you have to have it open the whole time because it has to be listening the whole time. Now, the other cool thing about this app is that it pops stuff up. So there's like trivia, like just before commercials and that.
Yeah.
It'll pop up a trivia question, like, what was the thing where the place, you know, with the stuff? And then you can answer it. And, like, I did it live because I wasn't sure if it was going to work on if I recorded it with TiVo. So I was watching it live, and they had surveys and stuff. You know, like, what would you do in this situation? And then you had, like, some choices that you could pick from, and then they came back and gave you the results and different stuff. And it was pretty neat. I dug it. I thought it was cool. And I'm actually interested in the show. It stars the guy that played Pyro in the last couple of X-Men movies before First Class.
Okay.
So it stars him as the guy who's bouncing back and forth between the timelines.
Okay.
And there's some other people in it that make you go, oh, hey, it's that guy. So it's kind of an interesting show on its own. Like, I probably would have had a mild interest in it because I enjoyed the movie, and I'm curious how deep they're going to dig into the story since they have all the room to do so in an hour series. So anyway, it was super cool. So I have a soft spot. I'm going to bring this back around. So here we go. There's a nice little, derail for you. You should check this out because it's cool. I'm sure they're going to rerun the premiere because they're going to want people to watch it again. You know, the second episode next week.
I'm so worried about now, like, my family putting in Philips Hue bulbs and just messing with me with this.
Now, the cool thing is that it doesn't happen, like, all the time during the show. So they're kind of subtle about it.
But,
so,
well, hold on. I mean, you're talking to a guy who can and did loan his laptop for the purpose of a public presentation that was accompanying a concert and couldn't explain satisfactorily why the colors didn't match on what was being projected because he forgot he was running the Flux utility that changes your white balance based
over
on
time.
The time of day when the sun goes down.
Oh my
so
gosh.
I'm not the most tuned into my environment. That's what I'm trying to say here.
Okay.
And if the lights are just changing subtly, like, the first three or four times it happens, I'm probably just going to be like, oh, well, that's probably my imagination. Until it gets to, like, the flashy part of the episode, I'll be like, what the F? What is going on? How is this television show about some wacky, screwed-up time travel monkeys now making my internet-connected lights? Internet of Things, it's an Internet of Terror!
This is when you run out into the street and start yelling about Skynet, isn't it?
I'm mad as hell, and my lights are not going to take it anymore. I'm sorry. I didn't even know about this. This is what happens, folks, when we don't discuss our topics before the show, is that Kelly will say something, and I'll say, I'm sorry.
Wait, what?
My brain is broken. That's not a real thing. And she'll say, of course it is, and she'll talk about it. I was like, well, this is terrifying. This is like... You take the Elon Musk Google happy nice world of robot cars and you combine it with the Google Boston Dynamics evil robot military mule world of things, and that it scares me and I don't want it.
Mike, anyway. Why are you watching TV by candlelight?
I don't trust the bulb. The bulbs are listening. Damn
because
it.
The lighting in my house can't be trusted. Don't talk too loud. The light bulbs can hear you.
Philips Hue. Is that, that's a Vietnamese name, isn't it? I know, they're listening. Wow. Talk about the last flight out of Saigon.
Oh,
jeez.
God, the light bulbs might be listening. There's a show title.
There we go. That's it. I'll write that down. I'm jotting that down.
The light bulbs could be listening. So anyway, So Philips Hue came out with an app to control the light bulbs. They have their own. There are a number of people who have built their own. Philips published the API. It's a big deal. There's a variety of other lights in the Hue family that you can get. We have some LED strips at my house. There's a variety of stuff. After iOS 8 was released with the notification widget, they mocked one up immediately. They built a widget into the app so that from Notification Center, you can have, I think it's four. If you've configured scenes for your app, for the lights, where you can configure, you know, the brightness and the color and the tone and all that, you can set the bulbs up to have particular things, and then you can save that, and you can put four of them in the Notification Center, so bam, like, I have an all-off button in Notification Center. So when I go to bed, I can just hit that, and bam, all the lights go off. It's awesome. Yeah, I love that. And so they put out the notification widget. They were super, you know, when HomeKit was announced, they were like, we're looking into HomeKit. It's going to be awesome. And then, you know, they were like, hey, look, here's an idea for the Notification Center widget. We want to build one because we think it's cool. You know, they've always been a big supporter on iOS. So they hadn't said anything since about HomeKit. And there's been some rumblings lately because of CES. A lot of people were talking about HomeKit. Mm-hmm. And their plans for HomeKit, which took forever, apparently. And Apple hasn't said anything about HomeKit. It's been really quiet on the HomeKit front.
It's been silent home.
Eerily silent. Yep. So I went and started asking. So I shot Belkin an email to say, hey, so, you know, are Wemo and HomeKit two great tastes that taste great together? And they got back to me and said, in the very near future. You know, yay, HomeKit, we love it. We have something. We will have something to announce in the very near future, was, I think, I don't remember their exact words, but that's how it broke down. Was like, we don't have anything now, but you can see it from here. So, like, I'm waiting to see how that's going to actually evolve. I shot an email over to Philips and said, just went to their website and went to the press contact or whatever. I don't have anybody over there I talked to or anything. Shot them a note and said, hey, like, you know, is Hue plus HomeKit crazy delicious? And they got back to me and said something that mentioned Apple's HomeKit launch. Those were the exact words. We're excited about Apple's HomeKit launch. Which made me go, oh, ho.
Oh, whoa. Is Apple launching HomeKit? It hasn't happened yet.
Totally prairie dogged it and went, So I then took, and then I went, well, you know, if Philips is saying HomeKit launch, and Belkin is saying in the very near future, Kelly was off to the races. Because we all know last summer, I wrote an article begging and pleading for the Apple TV to be the new HomeKit hub. If you want to use HomeKit, you need something on your network that's going to be able to listen and parse out those commands and be able to say, you know, so when you say, Siri, it's time for bed, your phone's not what handles that. What happens is there's going to be something else that that gets passed off to. And I know this because I already have a HomeKit hub, or not a HomeKit hub. I have a home automation hub.
You have a what?
No, I have a home automation hub in my house. Mm-hmm. And you can set up a thing called a scene, which is basically a macro. It's like when you set up on your universal remote and you have like watch
movie.
So
I want these five things to happen when I press this one button.
So that's what Siri, it's time for bed, is going to do. But your phone isn't what sends out all those commands. So when you tell your phone, Siri, it's time for bed, it's not your phone that says, hey, Nest, turn down to this temperature. Hey, lights, I'll turn off. Hey, bedroom lamp, turn on. You know, whatever. Like, your phone's not where that happens. Because your phone comes and goes from the network all the time. You know, you leave the house once in a while. Most people, anyway, leave the house once in a while. So you need something on the network all the time that doesn't tend to come and go, that will be there to be listening and parse out those commands for you. Lots of people already have an Apple TV. This is something you could do with software. It would be a piece of cake to do if you really wanted to do it, if you wanted to add hardware to it. You know, it's been almost 3 years since Apple TV was updated. Wouldn't it be nice if we could get some concrete evidence that Apple didn't think it was a hobby anymore? And I laid out, like, this really, in my mind, of course, compelling case for why the Apple TV should be the HomeKit hub. Tons of people who already have an Apple TV could be brought to home automation. People who are interested in a lightweight version of home automation can pick up an Apple TV and also get all the other stuff that Apple TV does, and then also get, you know, Siri, it's time for bed, Siri, I'm on my way home, whatever. So I wrote this up because I was like, oh, well, if Belkin says this and Philips says this, and I was off to the races. Actually, I was off to my home, the home of crackpot theories. And so off I went. And gosh, did I theorize. And then I put the story up on Friday morning, like 11 my time. And about 6 or 6:30 my time, I got a call back from Phillips that was like, no. That statement's from September. And the launch that we were talking about was iOS 8. And I said, well, you didn't tell me. Here's what we said when iOS 8 was launched. You presented this to me like it was new information. Yeah, that's not how it was supposed to happen. That wasn't actually, you know. So there was miscommunication kind of on their end as to what it was I was actually asking. And then there was, and then so the information they gave me, there was no indication that this was an existing thing from 4 months ago that they were handing me just now. You know, because I asked and I was told, like, let me get back to you. I have your request. I'm going to go find out what Phillips has to say about this and let you know. So I was under the impression that this was new, that this wasn't old news. So it turns out what they said they were actually trying to explain to me was that this was the launch of iOS 8 that they were talking about with the HomeKit launch. So, okay.
That's plausible, I guess.
Well, I mean, technically, that is when HomeKit was, I mean, and now the bulk of the Philips team is in Europe, which is why the word launch was used, which may not have been the word that they're actually looking for. They were probably looking for release, you know, the release of HomeKit, because when iOS 8 was delivered to folk at large and not just in developer beta, that's when lots of people were able to get their hands on HomeKit, even though they couldn't do anything with it. I did some investigation on the developer end as far as HomeKit goes, and there is a certification program. It's like the Made for iPhone program. But it'll be for HomeKit, and there are a number of companies who are going through the process of trying to get certified now and get things built. You know, once the plans and everything that they have been submitted and are approved to be certified, then from there, it moves on to be something that they can actually go and build and put the HomeKit logo on. So it'll say Made for iPhone on it. You know, like when you buy a charger and stuff from a known brand, you know, they always say Made for iPhone, iPod, iPad. Mm-hmm. It'll have that, and then it'll also have the same thing, but for HomeKit. So it'll be, you know, the same sort of thing for the same, basically the same process, just for HomeKit instead. So when I looked into that, it sounds like what happened was it just took companies a few months to actually get this kicked off properly, and now that it's certified, it became something that they're going to be able to actually go and construct, is sort of how it turned out, in my estimation. So, you know, I was really excited to have stumbled onto something, and it turns out I kind of didn't. So maybe
stumbled,
or maybe not.
Stumbled
or,
being the operative word.
Maybe I did, but maybe I didn't. And it, you know, like there's kind of a strong argument either way, really, at this point. So if something were to happen, and Apple does, I mean, we all know Apple is going to look, you know, if Apple were to get in touch with me, Apple's going to look me in the eye and deny it until the invite for the event goes out. Like, we know that to be true.
That's pretty much what happens all the time. Yeah.
Exactly. No. Until right now, and now yes. So, you know, it's still possible. It could still happen. I am an optimist. I live in hope.
Well, that's a good place to live. It's nice.
Yeah.
It's nice there.
It is.
Well, you know, we can always hope for a wonderful, gorgeous, fantastic home automation system. And if anyone's going to do it...
Exactly.
If anyone's going to do it, it's going to be, you can, you know, it's going to be the Apple Pay of home automation. It's just one touch. Isn't that amazing?
And it's...
There's going to be a little video showing of, like, how hard it is to turn your lights off.
And here's
like,
the
look
thing...
Look at what you had to go through to turn your lights off. Oh, my God.
I know. Well, and here's the thing, is that, like, the Wemo app is really straightforward. Turn it on, turn it off. It's a binary system. You can hook Wemo up to if this, then that, and do other tricky things with it. Like, you know, and there's some basic automation in the Wemo app where you can go, because I have some of those too, where you can go, like, every morning at a certain time, turn on the coffee maker, or turn on, like, we have a hot water machine at my house, a water boiler, and so, you know, it comes on in the morning at a certain time so that the water's already boiled so I can make tea in the morning, you know, or coffee if I want it, and you know, that's super convenient. I don't have to remember to do it, which is sometimes hard because I haven't had any coffee yet. So that helps. And then, you know, so there's some basic stuff in the Wemo app. There's some stuff you can do with the Philips. You know, you can hook both, like I said, you can hook both of those up to a service called If This Then That,
yes,
which you can find online, which is a beautiful thing that you can use all kinds of stuff to do. You know, there's many, many examples out there of doing this. But you can hook the Wemo switches up to it, do different things. You can hook your Hue lights up to it and do different things. There's some really cool stuff that you can do, some really lightweight stuff that, like I said, you know, isn't necessarily complicated, but is really nice to be able to have the option for. And there's a lot of room there. You know, each of those is nice, but if I have something on the Wemo switch and I have something else on the Hue switch, and I want to turn all of them off, it's two apps. I don't have turn everything off, it's time for bed. I have to go to the Hue app and turn off the lights. I have to go to the Wemo app and turn off whatever's on the Wemo. You know, if there's other stuff, I have to go turn that stuff off too, in like a third place. I have a whole folder on my phone for all the apps that I have to, in order to run everything. You know, I have an app for the sprinkler system because we bought a new sprinkler box that does it for me. And, you know, the box is smarter and it's awesome, but it's a separate app. And it's a separate app from the ones that runs the lights in the backyard, from the one that runs the Wemo, from the one that runs the Hue lights, from. There's so many. And the PETA factor on this is very high
yes, at the moment. Yes, extremely high PETA.
And because, like I said, it's an entire folder. So, and the hub situation right now, this minute, is either very lightweight. So you can get a Wink hub, which will control a few things. You can get, there's another hub that I can't think of the name of right now that's also out that will do a few things. And it's, again, it's sort of brand specific. Insteon has announced one.
I'm going to be using my Almond Plus, which does quite a bit of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then there's the high end one. So the actual hub that we have at my house right now is from a company called they used to be called Mi Casa Verde, and now they're called Vera because they changed their name and they're named after the device that they sell you now, which is called the Vera.
Yep.
And it's so funny to me. Oh, Home Depot, or not Home Depot, the one that's not Home Depot, Lowe's. Lowe's has the Iris system,
okay,
which is home automation stuff that you can buy. And you can buy from them a wide variety of things. So you can buy a light switch, and then you can run the light switch. So you can, you know, turn on the porch light when you're not home from your phone.
That's
that kind of
handy.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they have power outlets, so you can control, you know, turn this power, this particular socket power outlet on and off, you know, at whatever time. So if you have a lamp plugged in, you can turn on a lamp over the internet, which is pretty slick. So they have a hub. So we have Iris and we have Vera, and then Insteon has announced one. The Almond Plus will do some. There's a Wink hub, but you sort of there's no sort of middle ground. There's like the Wink one, which will do some limited support for the things that it feels like it wants to support. And then there's the Insteon one, which will obviously only do Insteon devices. I'm not sure where technologically the Almond Plus falls. They weren't available when we had to buy a new router, so it wasn't one we actually looked at.
Mm-hmm.
Because we kind of needed something that was available at Best Buy in the next hour, and the Almond Plus was not one of those, sadly. Otherwise, we would totally have one.
It's just shipping now.
In the last week or two.
Yeah, I was a crowdfunding contributor, so I got mine on the early side.
Right.
But yeah.
But there's sort of the entry level stuff, and then there's like the high end stuff, and there's no real middle ground, and I feel like that's the sweet spot. Because, and particularly if you're Apple, and you could get everybody who has an Apple TV in on the home automation, and then they buy more stuff that's home automated, you know, because they can run it with their phones, like, that to me seems like a great idea. Because, you know, you start with the Vera box, the Vera home automation hub, which is not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and from there you go up in complexity and cost. Because then after that you've got Crestron.
Crestron,
you've got
yes.
Savant. you know, all these custom home automation systems, which you can spend a breathtaking amount of money in a really short amount of time to get something like that tricked out for your house. Yes. And, you know, primarily because most of those require, you know, stash a Mac Mini in the closet, so you're already into it $500 before you even do it.
Number one, you've got a Mac Mini buried in the garage.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's expensive.
So step one, you know, you're into it for $500. And, you know, and that's sort of what is really nice about, like, the Wemo stuff is you go to Home Depot, you buy a couple of them. Occasionally they're on a deal. You can get, like, two of them for $50. And then you come home and you plug them in and bam, you have home automation. You know, or you go buy the crock pot that you can run with your phone. And then that way, like, when you're, you know, if you're stuck late at work, you can turn it to low and you don't have to worry about your food or whatever. So that's, like, super handy. And I like the idea that you can bring more people to it. It's one of those, I always called it the demystification, you know, like when television stopped being a special event and it was just sort of a thing that you had in your house, or like the microwave.
Uh-huh.
You know, the microwave does something really useful for you. And at first it was sort of complex and people had to kind of figure it out. And now everybody has one and it's not a big deal. It's just what you use. And I'm sort of hoping that home automation will get there, and that it will be less novel for people to be like, hey, look what I can do with my phone. And it'll be more like, I'm going to be out of town for a couple of days. It's like dinner time. I should probably turn the lights on so it looks like I'm home. You know, turn on different lights the next night. You know, you come back and it seems like you were there the whole time. That kind of stuff. So I really am excited about home automation because I feel like I'm standing on the very, very edge of the cliff and like leaning over into the chasm, and I can see where it's awesome. I just can't get there yet, and I really want to get there because it seems like it's so close, and I really feel like somebody like Apple coming in and planting that flag would just really cause the home automation stuff to explode, and I want it to. I think it would be amazing.
Yeah, see, when you say it that way, it doesn't sound so good. An automated home explosion?
But if I do it with my phone... Well, that's
what makes it cool.
Yeah.
No, this home exploding because I was, you know, using butane to extract hash oil. That's not cool.
I'm doing
it with my phone.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I hit this big red button in this iPhone app and kaboom. Yeah.
Apparently that's a thing now, by the way, in Colorado, is that people are blowing up their houses because they are doing butane extraction from weed to produce hash oil. So don't do that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but
no.
It's complicated because now some people could argue that it's legal to do that, although probably not legal to explode it. But anyway, that is neither here nor there. We'll have another episode of the Home Automation Podcast with Kelly next week. but there's a lot going on, and you know we came out of CES unscathed. We're heading into what's making me twitchy, and I'll share this. I'll share with the audience.
Yes.
I'll share this with you. I feel like I should be getting ready for Macworld.
Oh my god. Let me tell you about my Macworld moment.
Yeah.
I'm taking courses through Treehouse, this organization Treehouse, and I'm trying to learn some programming. And so I was taking the Objective-C course, and I felt like I was being really confused by it. So I switched from the Objective-C course to the like introductory programming course because I was hoping that would teach me concepts. And then I could use basic concepts, and maybe the Objective-C stuff would make more sense if I understood, you know, the basis of programming.
Yes.
So I go fire up this introductory programming, and they say, we're going to use JavaScript to teach basic programming concepts, because you don't have to learn a whole lot of syntax in order to do things in JavaScript. So I'm like, okay, awesome. So not that long ago, Dory Smith and Tom Negrino wrote... This is funny. They wrote the book on JavaScript. I know them. And I had mentioned learning to program, and Dory said, well, if you want to learn, JavaScript's a good place to start. I'll send you my book. Yeah. And I was like, sure. That would be awesome. And she said, if you have any questions, let me know. I'm really excited to help you out. So she sent me this book, and she, you know, put a little note on a bookmark and tucked it in there and sent me her and Tom's JavaScript book. So I've been sitting reading it, like, in conjunction with doing this Treehouse class, and I'm a few chapters in, And I happened to see it, I think it was yesterday or day before, I saw it sitting on the coffee table, and I happened to notice that my bookmark was pretty far into the book, and I went, this is so cool. I can't wait. You know, once I, like, really understand stuff, I can't wait to go tell Tom and Dory how excited I am and how useful her book was when I see them at...
See them in the basement of the mall having dinner.
Yeah. So, like, when I see them at the tip, it's...
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about that. I was responding to a tweet from Josh Centers. Josh is, of course, at the... among the fine folks at Tidbits, and it is Adam. Yes. It is Adam and Tanya Engst who are the presumptive hosts of the annual Inkstained Wretch Dinner, which is one of my favorite parts. It has traditionally been one of my favorite parts of Macworld ever since I've
Mine
been
too.
Invited to attend it, because it's just fun. It's people you don't see very often who you have a lot in common with, and just, you know, and this year, this past last year. I'm really, really glad I went, because it was kind of a spur of the moment, a relatively late decision, and if I had not gone, wow, I would feel really bad. But last year, I got to meet Josh and got to hang out with him a little bit, got to know him, and now I'm like...
We had beverages with Josh.
Now I'm teasing him on Twitter about the fact that he wants to come to New York City and hunt deer, because apparently we have a deer problem in New York City. and I said, you know, he said he wants to come... what did he say? He said he says, well, apparently New York City has a deer problem, may offer my services, to which I replied, we have a hipster deer problem. They're hanging out in lots of places you probably never heard of. you know, I enjoy Josh. Josh and I have, you know, very little in common, politically or philosophically, but we are simpatico.
Nerds of a feather.
We're nerds of a feather, and so it is all the nerds of a feather who I will not be seeing in person this year, including the great nerd bird of the galaxy, Mr. Paul Kent, I hope is doing something fun with his extra free time.
The only silver lining in it to me was, I was like, Paul must be so, like, I know part of him is heartbroken, but I also know part of him is probably, like, super relieved, you know, to have some time in January anymore. Or I guess February now, but whatever. You know, like, without having that hang over his head, you know, that must be kind of nice. Like, it'll be sad, but it'll be nice.
It will be. And it's, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I wish I could. It would be hard for me to justify getting away in January. It's very difficult to you know, to do it. It's expensive. Blah de blah de blah. I wish it were still happening. It's you know, people saying it's irrelevant, doesn't do, like, it's the iPhone case show. You know, I don't care.
Nope.
I'd rather be there.
Hallway track.
Yep, rather be there doing it. So, if you, like us, are having that feeling right now, which I'm sure Dave Hamilton and the rest of the Macworld All-Star Band are finding themselves a little twitchy. If you're having that sensation, give us a shout. Let us know. You can find us, of course, @_aftershow on Twitter. You can find our website at aftershowpodcast.com. And you can find me sometimes or another at the unofficial Apple weblog at tuaw.com, a little bit more actively of late. And, of course, you can find me on the Twitters at Mike T. Rose. Hopefully you will find me soon on a relaunched personal blog. You know, you get that twitchy feeling when you're – the other twitchy feeling when you're like, oh, here's a new blogging platform. This sounds interesting. Say – why don't I start up that blog again that I was doing? So I'm having that right now with Ghost. And I'm thinking, you know, I could host this. I could do this myself. Yeah, that's the ticket. Yeah. So I'm going to try to get the old jalopy out of mothballs. But anyway, Kelly G, where can the people find you?
You can find me writing things over at MacObserver.com. You can find me appearing here and there on various British Tech Network podcasts at britishtechnetwork.com. You can find me here on the After Show, and you can find me on Twitter as Verso.
Excellent. So, you introduced us. I'll detroduce us.
All right.
We will be back very soon. We'll hopefully be back next week. We're going to try to getting on our cadence,
yeah.
Getting on our horses. And thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight.